Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow is April 1st, the day that rent, mortgages, and bills are due for millions and millions of people across the country. 3.3 million people have already filed for unemployment benefits, which is a record high, and they need relief now. So how will the $2 trillion relief bill affect you? We will go over the specifics on today's show. There's a big question about who will receive payments. All workers, including gig workers, independent contractors, freelancers, those who are self-employed, and those who work part-time will receive payments. People receiving Social Security, supplemental security income, and veterans benefits will also receive payments. But who is not eligible? Well, this is another issue that we are definitely going to discuss today. The millions of undocumented people who live, work, and pay taxes will not get any help. So how will they pay their bills? What about people who are self-employed and people who are paid under the table? We will also talk about small business owners. Joining us to talk about all of this is Dr. Sylvia Allegretto, labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. Dr. Allegretto spent several years at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., where she is currently a research associate. She closely tracks economic statistics and how typical workers are faring. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Yes, Rose, it has. And usually not good news when we're speaking.
I know. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to join us. Thank you so much. I just want to start off, Sylvia, by talking about these major numbers that we are seeing. And we're actually getting new numbers from the St. Louis Fed. They say that COVID-19 could cost 47 million people their jobs and send the unemployment rate past 32%. So let's talk about the people who are affected by this, Sylvia. I mean, it really is across the board.
Well, it is across the board, but I think we have to keep in mind, don't let these numbers scare us. This is not the underlying economy. We're doing this on purpose to respond to a worldwide pandemic. So when we see unemployment claims surge, that's what we should expect. And in some sense, it's a measure, not a perfect measure, but a measure of how successful we're being at keeping America's 100 and almost 60 million workers either working at home or not working at all. What I worry about is that we don't want people going to work, but we don't necessarily want them on unemployment either. I wish the U.S. had taken a different strategy. It's not too late. They still can. But I think for now, and also moving into the other side of this pandemic, when we start to recover again, we don't want tens of millions of people separated from employment, from their jobs, and everybody scrambling for work. So I wish we would do what Germany is doing and Denmark and even the UK, and that's keeping workers tethered to their jobs. And the United States government taking over payroll, essentially, and also helping small and medium businesses to actually keep their and pay their fixed costs. So on the other side of this, we have a really strong rebound, the old kind of V-neck, the kind of V-shaped recoveries that we want. We might fall hard, but we want to bounce back just as strong, which, by the way, didn't happen during the Great Recession, right? Sure, the stock market was back in short order, but the U.S. workforce, it took 6 years to just get the jobs back that we had lost during the Great Recession. We simply cannot afford a slow recovery like that for the typical American worker.
So can you elaborate on this, Sylvia, because a lot of politicians are talking about the fact that the bill boosts unemployment benefits by $600 a week, and that is in addition to what you're getting from your state government, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, you are arguing that the United States should have done what other countries did, and that is work really hard to keep employees on payrolls?
That's right, because again, it's not going to do us any favors. By the way, I support the extension of unemployment benefits, the widening of the nets of unemployment benefits, because, you know, some places are probably going to have to leave their workers, unemployed. And don't forget, unemployed is a technical term, where it says you have to be searching for work and all that type of things. Now, they're relaxing those requirements, which is good. But if you keep these folks unemployed and not, tethered to their jobs, as soon as, we get to the other side of this and employers start hiring again, you're going to go through a process of listing tens of millions of jobs and then workers searching and trying to sort into tens of millions of jobs? That is going to be completely inefficient. So I support the idea of catching those who are falling through the net, but it's just not great policy to respond to this pandemic to have so many people technically unemployed instead of just technically not working but being paid, and also have their benefits being paid. So you don't have tens of millions of people that lose their jobs and also lose their health care, right?
Right.
Which is happening, exactly. And not then being able to afford it. Because it's great, because typical unemployment benefits without the additional $600 a month don't even, especially here in California, I mean, the highest weekly check you can get, the highest, is $450. That's not even going to pay your rent, let alone keep you whole. And by the way, the other important part of this, not just for job search and getting the economy on the other side going, but another point of this is that if people are getting paid, they're going to be calmer. We're going to be a calmer nation without everybody worrying, how am I possibly going to get through this, which is what everybody's worried about now. I mean, the check's not even in the mail yet, and we're a couple of months into this. On the other side of this, people will have pent-up demand, and they will have funds. This will keep them out of debt. This will keep small businesses out of debt. This will keep families and the economy basically frozen where it was before we started this, to a large degree. Again, that will get us to a really strong and quick recovery instead of destroying the lives of maybe, tens of millions of American households as they try to navigate how they are going to get unemployment benefits. Can they get unemployment benefits? Can they sign up for them? And all this type of thing. Because don't forget, as the check's in the mail, and we've moved very slowly, I mean, the time to respond bold and swiftly has passed us already. I can't imagine I can only imagine what it's like when you have, two household working parents who aren't working at all, with children at home wondering how they're going to make it, because we have so many families that in even good times live paycheck to paycheck and are one unfortunate, misstep away, health crisis of their own, not even in the pandemic, that are away from ruin. This is basically a damnation of the type of capitalism that we've been practicing in the United States for a very long time. It's certainly laying bare that when you have people who aren't typically in favor of sick leave, aren't typically in favor of universal health care, and all of a sudden they are. They think, these workers need this now because we have a pandemic, except for these workers and families need these universal benefits that we should have for every working family and every family in the country. They need them all the time because they're facing their own crises all the time.
Sylvia, you brought up a number of points there. To the point about when people can see this money in their account, the Treasury Department says that money will be deposited into as many as 150 million household accounts within 3 weeks. But the Tax Policy Center says that a lot of disappointed people will have to wait months for a variety of reasons. And that is, old software, not enough employees at the IRS. I mean, the list is pretty long. So what are people supposed to do if they're not going to get the money for a few months?
Well, that's what I mean. That's why this pandemic is going to go into just, a crisis of, things like we've never seen before, even as bad as the Great Recession was. This is going to be so much more widespread than that. Well, I mean, they are getting some other help. At least we know that we're passing policies such as, you can't be evicted for the next few months. That gives you, a little bit of hope. You still have a roof over your head. That's not much, right? So, I mean, again, we've reacted very slowly. on this one. We should be on our at least second type of stimulus. Again, we need to hit this from a lot of different policy angles because people fall through the cracks. And right now, there's no reason, as the richest country in the world, that we aren't responding in kind with bold policies to keep American families whole, to keep America's businesses whole through this. We could do it. The question is, will we? And right now, we're falling further and further behind in helping American families weather this worldwide pandemic.
Sylvia, the other thing I was wondering is, how did these politicians come up with these numbers? Because let me just go over the amount of money that people will see in their accounts. If you make $75,000 or less a year, you will get $1,200. If you make $80,000 or less, you'll get $950. If you make $85,000 or less, you'll get $700. If you make $90,000 or less, you'll get $400. If you make $95,000 or less, you'll get $200. After that, you won't get any relief. And if you do have children, you will get $500 for each child, but this only applies to children 16 or under. And then I guess the most important part, Sylvia, is that this is just a one-time payment.
Right. Again, as most of our benefits, when we talk about benefits in the United States, the first thing we do is talk about who can we, the firewalls we put up to see who we can leave out, who's not going to, you know, fall under the, you know, being eligible and covered. We ration benefits all the time, so that has continued, even with the sick leave bill that passed a week or so ago. I mean, it left out companies that were 500, larger than 500. So this is always going on. I mean, why is it that we don't have universal, you know, sick leave, and that, you know, less than a third of low-wage workers get sick leave? But almost all high-wage workers get sick leave. It's just the way we have been running the country for a long, long time. That makes no sense, that we start out rationing benefits and not giving them to the people that need it the most, the people that are going to have a hard time weathering this storm. So they come up with these numbers by looking at some data and just figuring out, oh, we'll just cut it off here. But I think what you're getting at is in places like California, where it's really expensive, a family that might be making $100,000, that's not probably enough to help them weather the storm if they're unemployed, if they've been separated from their jobs, if they're not being paid, paying their rent or even their mortgage here, right? So what might seem like a lot of money when you're in one part of the country is not going to be a lot of money in another part of the country. So like I said, in California, unemployment benefits are, you know, without the extra $600, we're topped at $450. Well, even before the pandemic, those benefits were far too low because workers, they lose their job through no fault of their own. We need to really have a much propped up, stronger safety net. And again, this health crisis, this pandemic is really lying bare that all of these problems always existed, but it seems like they're only coming on the radar to a lot of politicians now.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Sylvia Allegretto, a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. And today we are talking about the $2.2 trillion bill that passed last week. Donald Trump signed it last week, and we're talking about how this will affect you. If you have any questions, give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Sylvia, we talked a little bit about unemployment, and as you said, in California, the benefits are between $40 and $450 a week for up to 26 weeks, and that amount depends on your wages. $600 will be added to that amount every week, but it will only be in place for 4 months. Sylvia, can you explain why states have different unemployment rates? Because I was reading that in New Jersey, their rates are much higher than California. They're $713 a week.
Because this is state-run policy. The unemployment insurance compensation is basically run within each state. Here we have the Economic Development Department. That's where everybody is logged on to now trying to get on the UI system. So that's simply why it is. I mean, in like you mentioned, it's vastly different across states, and it doesn't seem to have a tight relationship with cost of living, because there are a lot of states that are much higher than California, and there are a lot of states much lower than California. So this is a system that's always been pretty inadequate, because you lose your job, and it's, you know, in places like California, it might be unemployment benefits might replace 20 or 30% of your pay. So, you know, it's just basically because states determine what they would like to do. It is good, again, that you mentioned that the 600 is on top of, and there's been some confusion about that, but it is on top of what you're going to get from the state of California, for instance. But it only lasts right now until the end of July, I think. And the important thing here is this $2 trillion that you talked about. That's part of the package that's going mostly to workers and small and medium businesses. There's a large part of that package above that that's going to corporations. It was completely unnecessary. But just think of the Great Recession, where we lost 9 million jobs. That was over a decade ago, right? You have said on top that St. Louis Fed, rightly so, was thinking almost 50 million jobs. That's a really enormous amount of job loss that's happening, right? So the idea that we spent about $830 billion, so just short of a trillion, to respond to the damage of the Great Recession, will tell you that $2 trillion today to respond to what we're looking at is far too little.
And Sylvia, what we're seeing is that restaurants are launching GoFundMe campaigns. We just got an email from the Office of Economic Development from the City of Berkeley. They're going to open up grant applications to support residents and businesses. I saw something similar in San Francisco. So people are really trying to piece things together to ensure that people will be able to pay their bills. But as you said, one of the major solutions that's being embraced in other countries is that the government really steps in and takes over the payroll to ensure that people are making almost what they made a month ago.
Yeah, because that would keep a lot less people scrambling around. And by the way, there are some in the acts that, you know, the bills that just passed, there are provisions where employers now, and the I don't think this is actually up and running yet because this just happened, you know, employers can get grants that will be forgiven if they keep their workers on payroll. The problem is it's probably not going to be up and running quick enough, because already we've seen unemployment spike, especially the claims, which we'll see again on Thursday. That's a weekly report that comes out. It's going to be in the many, many millions. So businesses are already laying off their workers. So then you put the onus on the business to try to figure out how to do this, right? So we needed this really strong and different reaction from the government. I mean, they wanted to rely on unemployment as if we're having a typical recession. And while that might be good and catch some people that are falling through the cracks, that shouldn't have been our main focus. And I think we're going to see, and I'm afraid what we're going to see, is a much more prolonged economic downturn. We're certainly in a recession. The question is, are we going to go into a depression?
Well, and so since you talked about models in other countries, let's just talk about what is happening in the Netherlands. This is according to Business Insider. That government announced that it was moving to pay private firms 75 to 90% of their workers' salaries. This is about $4,000 a month for each worker to prevent huge layoffs. Denmark could spend as much as 13% of its GDP to finance this plan. And Peter Hummelgaard, the nation's employment minister, said this is very different from 12 years ago when, as you might say in American terms, we bailed out Wall Street and forgot about Main Street. This time around, it's about preserving Main Street as much as we can.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's what we should be doing. Large corporations have unlimited access to funds. They will be fine for the most part. It's the small businesses on Main Street, the medium-sized businesses, that we don't want to lose here. That would just be a catastrophe. We already have too much consolidation of businesses and large corporations taking over. On the other side of that, we don't want more monopolistic behavior. That's only going to hurt the people that are already going to be suffering the most through this downturn. Maybe we couldn't keep up with 100% of wages. That would be fine. Something like 75% would go a long, long way. Again, you can talk about the economic effects, which I do a lot, a V-shaped recovery, which is going to be so important. But right now, it's peace of mind for hardworking Americans that even during the good times, they don't really get that far ahead. They don't get their fair share of an ever-growing economic pie, and they need to be helped now, and they need to be kept as whole as possible.
Well, let's take a few calls. Let's hear from Susie in Oakland. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for this show. I'm interested in knowing about the FICA tax that was supposed to say, oh, we could postpone the payment of the FICA tax, which has to do with Social Security for those of us on those programs. So can you comment about it? Did they leave it in? Did they take it out? I can't find it.
Sylvia, do you know?
Rose, I'm not sure about that either, because there has been reporting on both of those issues that that was one of the first things they were going to do, and then they were going to put it in the bill later, and I'm not sure if it made it or not. I really worry about that, and that's one of the reasons why it was, I think, some politicians' first reaction, is because that's where Social Security is based on. And I do worry about people trying to use interest groups, trying to use this time to forward, kind of weakening a Social Security, taking money out of the Social Security trust fund and then not repaying it in, and then down the road saying, oh, look, this is too weak. We need to cut back funding. We need to cut back benefits, or we need to privatize the whole thing. But as far as what's happening right now, I'm not sure that's happening. But again, I wouldn't really think that's a great way to handle this. That's a small amount of money that is not really going to put much money into the hands of workers at this time. And I really hope that they go back to the table and rethink our strategy here and really think, if we're the richest country in the world, we can bounce back from this. We definitely will one way or another. What I worry about is what's going to happen to the typical family, what's going to happen to poor and working class Americans through it all. So we need a much stronger policy that goes far beyond even that one item that, again, I'm not sure it's in there or not.
Well, and Sylvia, what about undocumented people? I mean, so many people work in many, many industries in this country, and they're not going to see any relief. So what about them?
Yeah, that's a very important point. I know there's certainly immigration groups that are on this and trying to figure out what can be done. Certainly at the federal level, I don't think we'll see anything being done, right? Just because of what's happening and how we're all worried about immigrants now in this country, when they are right now in the fields picking our food. Right. They are right now without, probably the protections they need. And so, I really do worry about this. I hope that in a state like California, we'll certainly see some action.
Well, I just want to say that I was reading an article this morning in The Guardian by Susie Cagle, and the headline is, California's farm workers pick America's essential produce unprotected from coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely do a show about that in the coming weeks. Before we let you go, Sylvia, Speaker Pelosi says that they're already talking about another stimulus relief bill, whatever you want to call it. What should people be doing to demand a better bill? I mean, and who knows how long this is going to take, but what can people do?
Everybody should be calling their representatives. It's very easy to find the main lines into your representative's offices. You can call in. You can tell them, once you start learning about how, maybe some other people are thinking about this, what policies that you listen to that you think may or may not be good. But you should definitely be letting your voice be heard in the halls of, the powerful politicians in this country.
Dr. Sylvia Allegretto is a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. Sylvia, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Sure, Rose. Be well.
You too. Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will speak with UC Berkeley Professor of Public Policy, Robert Reich, and we will continue taking your questions about financial relief. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org if the line is busy, or post a comment or question on the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will continue taking your questions about the coronavirus. We still don't have the data that we need about clusters because testing remains very low in the United States. So we will talk about the importance of testing, shelter-in-place policies, and what we now know about how this fatal virus affects people of all ages. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can send us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about financial relief, much-needed financial relief. Now I would like to welcome Robert Reich to the show. Robert is professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. Professor Reich served in three administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor during the Clinton administration. He is the author of 12 books, including his newest, The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Professor Reich, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Rose. Can you hear me all right? I just want to make sure that all there are connections, since I'm sheltering at home, and maybe you are. I hope you are, and I hope you're safe.
Yes, I'm in my kitchen. Thank you. And you sound just fine.
Good. Okay.
So, Robert, Professor Reich, you've been tweeting about this bill, since the coronavirus hit, because you knew that this was coming. And you say that this one-time payment of $1,200 is insulting. We had on your colleague, Dr. Allegretto, and she said, the United States is really messing this up. They really should have taken the same policy that Denmark and a couple other countries have embraced by paying people to ensure that they do not lose their jobs. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think she's right. I mean, the whole point here is to get people to stay home. It's not to revive the economy or stimulate the economy or get jobs back. I mean, that's that language and that attitude is appropriate to a deep recession. But what we have now is less of an economic crisis than a public health crisis. The economic crisis is the result of what we must do to try to deal with this pandemic. And so what the government ought to be doing as fast as possible is paying people to stay home, just like we ought to be making these tests free and fully available to everybody, and taking on we as taxpayers, government, we as the United States ought to be taking on all of the health needs that people have that are extraordinary if they do get this virus and they have to go to a hospital. It's in all of our interest, Rose, and I think this is where we get hung up, because we're such an individualistic country. We don't think these ways except during times of war, and this is a kind of a war. We are so dependent on each other doing certain things because we are only going to be as healthy as the least healthy members of our society. We, as long as people are not able to stay home, if they don't get sick leave, if they don't have the income support they need to stay home and take care of their families and shelter in place right now, then this is just going to go on and on and on. I mean, more and more people are going to get sick, and more, sadly, tragically, are going to die.
And we went over the amounts of the relief that people can expect. The highest amount is $1,200, and that is if you make $75,000 or less every year. And if you have a child, you'll get $500, but this only applies to children 16 or under. Professor Reich, this is just a one-time payment. You know, you can add your unemployment benefits to that, which will be 4 months, but what happens after that?
Well, first of all, $1,200 for most people in this country is really not going to take them very far. The average American worker earns about $1,000 a week and has expenses that are about $1,000 a week, but that's the average. I mean, a lot of people are on the coasts in very high rent, high housing cost areas like California, and $1,200, a one-time payment, is going to take them maybe 3 days. I mean, it's absurd. It's almost an insult when you figure that $500 billion are going to big corporations who don't need it. Now, the unemployment insurance you mentioned is real. That's good. It's $600 above whatever unemployment insurance people would otherwise be entitled to under their states. States vary from state to state. And the other good thing about this is that gig workers, contract workers, are included in this unemployment provision. What's not so good is that it's very difficult. If you tried to get through to your unemployment insurance office, you find, not surprisingly, that switchboards are completely jammed. Even the websites are falling apart. They're just not prepared for this caseload, and it's going to take weeks before people get any unemployment insurance at all. And you ask, is 4 months going to be adequate? Well, I don't know. We don't know at all how long this is going to last. I do think there's going to be another coronavirus bill introduced into Congress, probably, I would expect, in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Congress, the administration, begins to see how long, what a duration this means in terms of the necessity of people being locked down and sheltering in place. And maybe, hopefully, then we will see some real relief for average people.
Professor Reich, can you speak a little closer to your phone because we're losing you at times?
Okay. How's this?
Okay. Oh, much better. Thank you.
Okay.
And Professor Reich, since you brought up the employment department, the LA Times had a piece yesterday saying that California's employment department, their call center is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to noon. So not a very long time, 8 a.m. to noon. And the department says it has no plans to extend those hours because it needs as many workers as possible processing the claims.
Well, I kind of understand that, but my next question is, why not hire more workers to process more claims? All of this whole pandemic is exposing a kind of dark underbelly to what we already knew about how the system functions or doesn't function, and for whom it functions and for whom it doesn't function. I mean, we've got a lot of workers on the front lines who are being exposed to this virus. They're not getting hazard pay. They're not even, if you're a nurse in most hospitals or a hospital orderly or even doctors, they're not getting adequate, N95 masks. There's a shortage of those masks. I was talking this morning to a nurse in Massachusetts, for example, who has been issued no protective gear whatsoever, including protective gloves. The hospital says they don't have it. These people are really our national heroes, but instead of treating them as heroes, what we're doing unwittingly is we are subjecting them to the possibility of very dangerous conditions and disease and maybe even death. And yet we are kind of assuming that this is the way it has to be. There's no reason that an unemployment office in California can't bring on a lot of additional people to handle the caseload. This is, this is the richest country in the world. We have $21 trillion a year in national output on a typical year. I mean, obviously, this is not going to be a typical year. But we have the wherewithal to do anything we need to do to protect our people and make sure they have the income support they need. And we ought to be doing it.
Today we're speaking with Professor Robert Reich. He's professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. His latest book is called The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. And let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Jennifer in Richmond. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show. Hi, do we have Jennifer?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you so much for the show, Rose. I have been on some town halls with people such as Barbara Lee and Nancy Skinner that were hugely informative, but there were so many other people on the call with questions I couldn't get through for an answer. I am self-employed, and compared to others, I have really nothing to complain about. I thought, oh, 3 weeks, I can handle that. But I can't handle 3 months. So my questions, I just wanted to confirm, the SBA, it sounds like there's this and there's that and there's the other. Actually, no, I'm pretty sure what I understand, and I just wanted to confirm, through the CARES Act, which is going to go through SBA, there's a disaster relief loan for people who are self-employed like myself. I have absolutely no income when I'm not working. I have a non-toxic hair salon, and I have one subletter. And I would like to be able to pass along any kind of help that I'm getting from the landlords to her. And they were kind enough to do 25% off. But getting to my point, what I can't sustain 2-3 months. I have 2 kids. One of them is 17 and a half. We don't qualify for any of this, as Robert Reich mentioned. I mean, I share all these frustrations. And I get to the point where I'm so frustrated by hearing, it sounds like everybody's on the same page, but nobody, I mean, I call my representatives, I write my representatives, but being in California, generally speaking, they're on the same side, and I feel like Mitch McConnell's really the biggest roadblock in all this. So just to get to my point, confirming for people like me, is the SBA Disaster Relief Loan through the CARES Act the only thing available for self-employed people who have no income right now?
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. Professor Reich, you looked at the $350 billion in the bill for small businesses. What kind of help is there for people like Jennifer?
Well, there is help in the bill for people like Jennifer, and that $350 billion is real. The question, though, is how people like Jennifer get their hands on the money. Starting Monday, if you go to the Small Business Administration website, there will be, or at least expected to be, information detailing precisely what you do, what steps you take to get some of that disaster relief. And for small businesses, they do have and will have loans that are forgivable, fully forgivable, if people like Jennifer have employees and they keep the employees on the payroll. Now, not at, send your employees home by all means, but at least keep them on the payroll and keep paying them. Then if Jennifer or people like Jennifer have small businesses, they can get SBA loans, Small Business Administration loans, and those loans will be forgiven at the end of this loan period. Now, the $350 billion part of this disaster relief, doesn't specify a length of time. So, Jennifer, if you're listening, it's not just for 3 weeks. It does, as I read the legislation, it looks more like 4 months. But again, the SBA will have that information for you on Monday. That's what I'm told.
All right, Jennifer. Well, thank you so much for calling in. And we are going to do a show about small businesses in the near future to find out what other relief options are out there for you. So thank you again for calling in with your story. Professor Reich, we have an email from Chris. He says, why hasn't the Democratic Party come out strongly for a robust guaranteed basic income and free Medicare for all as the basic necessities to bolster capitalism going forward? He writes, David Chang in today's New York Times said he thinks the restaurant industry is going to collapse nearly completely. He even says hospitality workers should be given guaranteed basic income and health care.
Everybody should get a guaranteed basic income and health care. I don't think that our legislators right now, Rose, are up for doing this. They are sort of responding to the crisis as best they can, and they have a kind of crisis mentality. Republicans, particularly Senate Republicans, are very nervous about doing anything that feels like what they label socialism, and they don't want to essentially buy into anything that Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren were saying on the campaign trail. But here's the possible silver lining, and I'm always looking for silver linings, as you know. This possible silver lining is that once we come out of this, and this is similar to what happened when we came out of World War II, there's a deeper sense of how dependent we are on each other, and that we need government. And it's, you know, it's not just nice to have certain things. They really are necessities and matters of life and death. And so the discussion I think we are going to have after the pandemic about Medicare for all or a guaranteed minimum income, I think is going to be informed by a different kind of life experience that all of us have gone through than it was, say, even 2 or 3 months ago.
Professor Reich, Chris also says, what about a rent moratorium for the next 3 months as a token concession to the collapse of economic life? And I just want to point out that California Governor Gavin Newsom last week announced that 4 of the 5 big banks, along with almost 200 state chartered banks and credit unions, have agreed to put off collecting mortgage payments for up to 90 days from borrowers who can document that they've been affected by the crisis. But a lot of people are criticizing Governor Newsom for not taking drastic action for tenants. And The Guardian has a piece today saying that tenants across California are organizing rent strikes for the month of April, arguing that they will not be able to pay their landlords for the foreseeable future.
Well, I'm very sympathetic to that. I mean, why should big commercial real estate outfits continue to collect rent when we are putting kind of an economic pause button on the entire society? You know, we are essentially locking down and stopping our economy for the sake of making sure that people don't get sick and die in this pandemic. The stakes are huge, and big real estate agencies and big commercial real estate corporations ought to do exactly what 4 of the 5 major big banks did. Well, I don't know why Bank of America is the standout there. Why Bank of America is not doing what the other banks are doing, we can come back to that. Here's the thing. We've got a lot of owners of rental properties that are basically very small businesses. I mean, they are maybe mom and pops. Maybe they are people who have one additional house that they're renting out for their own livelihood. We've got to be careful that we don't hurt them inadvertently in the process of having a rental moratorium.
Right. And just for people who are curious about this, because we have been receiving emails about evictions, according to The Guardian, the city of Oakland has passed what advocates say is the strongest protection in the state, with a moratorium that prohibits all evictions and prevents late fees and rent hikes in the next 2 months. Whereas LA City Council stopped short of passing a complete ban on evictions and requires tenants to defend themselves against an eviction in court. The policy gives tenants a year to repay landlords. San Francisco also continues to allow limited evictions. Professor Reich?
I think that the idea of doing this city by city makes some superficial sense. I mean, these cities have slightly different circumstances, and they therefore are probably best suited to make these trade-offs and these decisions. But I worry that by making this on an ad hoc basis, city by city, we're missing some of the biggest issues, such as, for example, our large and growing homeless population. What about them? What about making sure that they have the shelter they need? What about asking some of the big hotel chains that are getting bailed out to take in our homeless population? I mean, if we're really talking about a national emergency, and this is what this is, then we've got to get all corporations, not just the big commercial real estate outfits, but all corporations, to take some responsibility. And frankly, Rose, I can easily get angry at at abuses of power and wealth. But when you look at companies like Amazon, which refuse to provide their workers with paid sick leave unless the workers actually test positive, and not until the workers test positive, And even then, only 2 weeks of paid sick leave. Well, I mean, how can you deal with that rationally? These are gigantic corporations. They are the richest corporations in America. They're making more money now than they were making before the coronavirus outbreak because they are so many people are dependent on Amazon. The same thing with regard to warehouse employees, UPS. The same thing with regard to healthcare workers who are not getting adequate protective gear. I mean, all of these, particularly for-profit institutions, need to just put aside their for-profit needs or demands and join up with everybody else who is trying to sacrifice in many, many different ways for what we're going through right now.
Professor Reich, we have a few emails from freelancers, and based on my reading of the bill, according to a number of outlets, the people who will receive payments include gig workers, independent contractors, freelancers, those who are self-employed, and those who work part-time. Is that right?
That's right, and that's under the unemployment insurance part of the new bill. And that, again, provides $600 a week in addition to any other unemployment benefits that any workers would be entitled to. Now, typically, under unemployment insurance, a contract worker or a gig worker or self-employed would not be eligible for unemployment insurance. But what is under this bill, they will be they will be eligible for unemployment insurance. That's good. I worry, though, we talked about a little bit before, that the unemployment insurance offices are just overwhelmed and overrun.
And we have another question from a hairdresser who says that 43% of hairdressers pay rent to the salon owner where they work. Diane writes, "We're not employees, yet we must pay that chair rent in order to have a workplace to go back to. There is no provision for us."
And I've heard that, not in, in terms of a lot of self-employed gig workers, contract workers, that in terms of the rent that they are paying, the cost that they are enduring, and they need to, even though if they're going to get some income over the next weeks and months, they still need to be able to go back and resume work. There is no recourse for them. Hopefully in the next coronavirus bill, and as I said before, Congress is now just beginning to turn their attention to gaps in this bill. There will be provision made for a lot more of those small businesses, independent businesses, and self-employed people, because that is more and more of our economy. I mean, something like this comes along, this pandemic, and it lifts the veil on what the economy really is. This economy is basically a service economy in which you have very large numbers of people who are self-employed or gig workers who are have absolutely no labor protections at all, who have no job security whatsoever, who are living paycheck to paycheck or living basically what they make from week to week. They are very, very vulnerable. Their families are extraordinarily vulnerable. They know it, but many of the rest of us who have much more secure jobs, we're not quite as aware as perhaps we should have been. Which gets back to the caller that said, you know, maybe we, you know, why don't we have a minimum payment, a minimum income for everybody? And I think that, as I said before, that should be and will be something that people appreciate and understand and will back more readily, I think, when this is all over than they did even 2 months ago.
We talked about undocumented workers with Dr. Allegretto, and I'm wondering what you think, Professor Reich. We just got an email from a listener who says, "I spoke with a great laborer who works for me sometimes. He is already out of work and almost money."
Well, undocumented workers are not covered by this bill, not surprisingly, particularly given Republican antipathy toward undocumented workers. But remember, undocumented workers, for the most part, are paying taxes. They are also paying Social Security. They certainly deserve to be covered. And I want to stress to you that in terms of the economy, but also in terms of health care and public health, these workers need to be able to stay home. If they contract the virus and they spread it, then we are all going to be even more endangered. What is good for them is also good for us. We have an enlightened self-interest, all of us, in making sure that everybody else who resides in the United States, regardless of their condition, has access to what they need to survive through the next, whatever, 3 months, 4 months, however long this takes.
Bob writes in, can Professor Reich explain what is really meant by a moratorium? Will people have to pay back rents and mortgages?
Well, it depends on the particular program that's in the bill. The small business program basically provides low-interest loans to small businesses, and those loans will be forgiven if the small business has kept employed on payrolls of their employees. Again, sending the employees home, but at least keeping them on the payroll so the employees have a source of income. With regard to other furloughs, other moratoriums, no. It varies from provision to provision. The provisions that I find most galling, actually, continue to be the big bailouts, the bailouts of the airline industry, the bailouts of Boeing. I mean, talk about a company that doesn't deserve a special billions of dollars from taxpayers. A Boeing that actually subjected so many of its customers to real lack of safety, I mean, real danger in terms of its airliner that it didn't even properly test. That's billions of dollars to big companies that should and could and I think in many cases, perhaps if there's a corrective legislation coming up, will be given to individuals instead of corporations. We've got to bail out individuals. There's no reason to bail out corporations.
To that point, Professor Reich, and we only have about a minute left, Ellen writes, please tell me if the bill exempts the Trump businesses from benefiting.
It does exempt the Trump businesses, but what worries me is that in the signing statement that Trump issued last Friday night when he signed the bill, he said that he didn't feel bound by those restrictions. He didn't even want to have, as the bill requires, an independent inspector general to oversee and make sure that he and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, don't simply reward their friends and political contributors and Donald Trump himself. I don't mean to be cynical about this, but I don't trust Mnuchin and Trump one inch if there is not an independent inspector general overseeing all of this. And I don't think Congress ought to give one penny to this big slush fund, which is what it will be, $500 billion. That's the part of the legislation I'm talking about now, until an independent inspector general is installed. And everybody knows that it will be reporting to Congress.
Well, Professor Reich, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back to talk about your new book.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. Robert Reich is professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He worked as labor secretary under the Clinton administration. His latest book is The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show and Kevin Vance, our line producer. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.